A beautiful young lady, harvest time celebrations, and a heroic man are the ingredients for a great love story, which begins not with moonlight and romance, but with a young widow's daring devotion to her mother-in-law. Welcome to Storyline. I'm Chantel Klingbeil, and I'm so glad that you've joined me. Whether or not this is your first time watching Storyline, I hope you feel a part of this program as we dig deep into the lives of Bible characters. We're coming to you live. Now, this means if you want to ask a question or contribute to the program, you can do so throughout our show. It's simple. You can do it in a variety of ways. You can call toll-free 888-9-STORYLINE, or use 707-210-70 to call or text. And for more instant interaction, if you want that, just find Storyline on Facebook. Storyline is all about stories, and we all like a good story, especially a love story. The Bible contains a collection of the greatest accounts. It covers everything, adventure, and yes, even romance. In Storyline, we focus on the special Bible people and the problems that they faced. We step into their world to study their challenges, heartbreaks, and victories. As we understand these Bible characters, we want to learn practical lessons for our everyday relationships. There are no happily ever after stories, but the records of real people with real issues. And the best part of it all is that even in the complex storylines, we find a God who loves us intensely and immensely. Most of us associate true love with flowers, cards, candlelight. We probably don't think of an impoverished old widow with a foreign daughter-in-law as having great relationship advice. And yet, one of the most popular wedding verses comes from Ruth, the foreign daughter-in-law, as she speaks to her mother-in-law. She even has a whole book in the Bible named after her. So grab your Bible and follow with us in the book of Ruth as we explore the secrets to lasting relationships. Let's rewind a long time, about 3,100 years ago. During the time of the judges, there was a famine in the land of Judah. So a man from Bethlehem in Judah decided to leave as a refugee in the region of Moab, along with his wife and two sons. The man's name was Elimelech, and his wife's name was Naomi. They both came from Bethlehem in Judah. They escaped the famine, but tragedy still seemed to follow them. Sometime later, Naomi's husband died, so there she was, with her two sons, in a foreign land. What would she do? Well, she managed to go on eking out a living, and her two sons grew up and married Moabite woman. One woman's name we have, her name was Orpha, and we do know the name of the other woman. Her name was Ruth. We don't know how long they were married, but we do know that both of the sons died. So poor Naomi was left all alone, bereaved of her two children as well as her husband. She decided to go back home to Judah. Naomi informed her two daughter-in-laws of her plans, and she advised each of them to return to their father's homes with the prospect of them remarrying. Then she kissed them goodbye, and they all cried openly. They said, "No, we're going with you to your people." Naomi said, "Go back, my daughters. There's no reason for you to return to Judah with me. I'm too old to get a husband and provide security for you." Again, everyone ended up crying. And then common sense prevailed, at least for Oprah. She kissed her mother-in-law goodbye, but Ruth just clung tightly to her. Again, Naomi tried to reason with her. Your sister-in-law's returning to her people and her gods. Follow your sister-in-law back home. But Ruth replied, stop urging me to abandon you. For wherever you go, I'll go. Wherever you live, I'll live. Your people will become my people, and your God will become my God. Wherever you die, I'll die. And there, I'll be buried. May the Lord punish me ever so severely if I don't keep my promise. Only death will be able to separate me from you. After this speech, Naomi realized that it was pointless. Ruth was not going to leave her. She was determined to stick with her. So Naomi set off for Bethlehem together with her daughter-in-law, Ruth. In Bethlehem, they arrived at the beginning of the harvest. There was no charity service or government aid, and they had to eat. So Ruth offered to do the back-breaking work of following the harvesters around to pick up anything that would be left behind. For a woman without any male protection, this was also potentially dangerous work. It so happened that Ruth began her work in the field of Boaz, actually a relative of Naomi's deceased husband. Boaz was intrigued by the young lady following the harvesters around. When he figured out who she was, he offered her a safe haven in his fields. When Naomi found out where Ruth had been working, she was excited. This man is a close relative of ours. He can be our guardian. Naomi worked out detailed plans for Ruth to get Boaz's attention. Boaz was already highly impressed with the faithfulness and love that Ruth had showed to Naomi. But while he was a close relative, there was an even closer relative that should be consulted, as this potential marriage would have far-reaching legal implications for the whole family. Boaz promised to sort things out as soon as possible. And true to his word, the very next day, he arranged a meeting at the city gate with the next of kin. The next of kin was eager at first, but when he realized that this involved more than just getting property, he balked at the idea of marriage with a strange Moabite woman. This was Boaz's opportunity. He legally becomes the kinsman redeemer, and as well as becoming protector of the property, he also agrees to marry Ruth. And so Boaz and Ruth are married, and the Lord enables Ruth, who had been childless in the first marriage, to conceive and have a child. She has a son. The village women are delighted. They say to Naomi, may the Lord be praised. He hasn't left you without a guardian today. May this little boy become famous in Israel. May he provide for you when you're old, for your daughter-in-law loves you, and she has been better to you than seven sons. Naomi took that little child, put it on her lap, and she became his very, very special grandma, his caregiver. Then the neighborhood woman said, a son has been born to Naomi. They named him Obed. Obed grew up and became the father of Jesse. And Jesse, the great King David's father. And the rest, as they say, is history. For Ruth, Boaz, and Naomi, the rest of the story may have been history, but history has a way of repeating itself. Naomi and her husband and two sons were driven from their home by a famine. Finally, tragedy drove Naomi back to Bethlehem, and this time Ruth experienced life as a foreigner in a strange land. They were ancient refugees. The number of people forcibly displaced worldwide has reached 43.7 million people, according to the UN's High Commission for Refugees. I try to imagine what I would take if I were forced to leave my home in a hurry, and I packed a backpack. Now, we've invited Todd Rees, who is... What are you, Todd?
I'm the Assistant Director for Emergency Management with the Adventist Development and Relief Agency.
And you deal with refugees.
Yeah, it's a big part of what we do in the emergency management. We try to help the refugees in the situations that they're in. And first, if I can, I'd like to make a distinction between refugees and internally displaced people, because internally displaced people are in the countries, stay within the countries that they are their home countries, whereas refugees actually cross a border into another country. Well, and Ruth was a refugee.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Well, right after the break, we're going to be getting into this.
Absolutely.
And into my backpack.
Excellent.
So stay right with us. We'll be back.
It is sobering to realize that not everyone who suffers the effects of alcohol actually chooses to do so. I call them those with no voice and also no choice, the unborn babies. Alcohol readily crosses the placenta and damages the unborn baby. The higher the dose of alcohol consumed during pregnancy, the greater the chance of fetal alcohol syndrome occurring. The central nervous system features of this condition include mental retardation, low intelligence, smaller head size, and hyperactivity. The physical features include retarded body growth rate, short nose, wide-set eyes, small cheekbones. Eye squint and damage to the optic nerves occur commonly. Sadly, fetal alcohol syndrome is the leading cause of mental retardation in many countries. There is no safe dosage of alcohol during pregnancy. Avoid problems and break the habit.
I have with me Todd Rees, who works with displaced people and refugees. Thank you again for joining us on Storyline.
It's my pleasure to be here.
Now, we were speaking just a little bit beforehand about my backpack over here. I try to imagine what it would be like to have to leave my house in a hurry. And so I grabbed what I thought would be the important stuff and put it in. And I'd like you to go through this with me and tell me how well I've done.
Let's see what you've got here then.
All right.
And as we're doing this, people can think about what they would take if they had to leave their house in a hurry.
Now, I must tell you that I am notorious for packing, even for a vacation, piles of stuff. So this was really, really tough. I put in a change of clothes.
Okay. Yeah. And you also have here a sleeping bag.
Sleeping bag. I thought that would be useful.
Yeah.
Is this things that refugees normally carry with them?
Absolutely. Some sort of sleeping mat or, of course, clothes. They may have only the clothes that they're wearing in a lot of cases, but sometimes they have an extra pair.
Now, I thought to myself I'd have to probably dress heavy, not in this kind of outfit.
Right.
Probably a big jacket or something else to carry along with me.
Well, yeah, it would depend on, of course, the climate that you're living in and the seasons. Mm-hmm. But if it's winter here, of course, you'd want to have warmer clothes. Or if it's tropical weather, then you're going to be not need as many. So
what really sort of struck me while I was doing this was the fact of, you know, when I've packed for a vacation, I know where I'm going and I know how long I'm going to be there.
Yeah,
I have a feeling this is very different.
Yeah, when you're able to plan for what you're packing, it makes a big difference. you know, if you're going on an international trip, for example, you would bring your passport.
Mm-hmm. Which, I thought that would be important.
Obviously, they won't even let you on a plane if you don't have your passport and you're going to another country. So, but however, if you're a refugee, you may not have had time to get your papers. You may be crossing borders without those documents. You may not even have them in the country that you're in, because some people don't have those. So
this would be a big problem. Is this one of the biggest problems you face, is documentation?
Yeah, documentation is a big issue for a lot of refugees. Mm-hmm. they don't if they don't have that, then they a lot of times will not have access to basic services in the host country where they're going to, and it even trickles down into their children, where, you know, if they don't have that, then their kids aren't registered, and maybe if they want to get married, they don't have the documentation, they can't prove who they are, they don't have the documentation, and it's an issue that just kind of stems, and it's something that ADRA helps out with and has helped out with in places
with documentation.
Like Thailand. Yeah, and in countries like Thailand with Burmese refugees there, northern Thailand, we've helped with documentation and other places as well. Yeah,
the other factor is time. You know, I can't imagine living with my sleeping bag and this one change of clothes indefinitely.
Right. Well, and
some refugees, they stay a long time. I mean, our story of Ruth, it was at least a 10-year lapse.
Right. They had a long time in that country. And like you said, you don't know how long you're going for. So, I mean, you have here also.
Oh, yeah. This was a big
some
thing.
Some food here. This looks like some spaghetti.
Yeah. These are just things I grabbed. But when I thought about it afterwards, I thought, I hope there'd be food along the way, because this would not provide more than two meals for my family.
Right. And
this was very heavy. These
cans today would be very heavy. But and a lot of the food that Ruth and her family would have had, or I'm sorry, Naomi, as she was leaving, would have had to carry would have been heavy too. They probably had things like lentils and heavy things, but they if they were able to glean along the way, it would have been helpful. They wouldn't have had to carry such a
heavy,
you know, 2 pounds of spaghetti here.
Well, you know, the other thing I thought of is, I just grabbed some medications, something for fever. It doesn't come into our story, but I'm pretty sure that if they weren't eating properly, you open yourself to all sorts of sicknesses.
Absolutely. And this is a big issue with refugees today, is just their general health. They don't oftentimes have clean drinking water, which then leads to numerous diseases. Also, sanitation is a big issue. So these are areas where ADRA is working to try to improve that for a lot of refugees in places like Sudan and some many other countries as well.
Well, I've got some more stuff in here. Let's see. Where did I put? I put something that I thought was very important. Oh, I had my water bottle.
Yeah, and this touches on what I was just talking about, having clean water. I mean, you may have access to water, but ensuring that it's clean is really, just a very important part to maintaining your health. And if you don't have that, then you're in trouble.
You know, I can't find it right now. It must have been hidden away somewhere in the day. Yeah, I did find it. I thought this would be useful.
Absolutely. You have a knife here, as you can see.
And I thought for cutting food and stuff. And then again, I thought, you know, if I get attacked by a wild animal along the way, I don't know how much good that would be. But
yeah, and this touches on a big issue that refugees face is protection. Mm-hmm. And staying safe in an environment. You're in a country where you don't know many people, if anybody. You may not know your way around very well. You're very vulnerable, and you're in a vulnerable situation to be taken advantage of in many different ways.
And this was Ruth's concern as well.
Right.
And it was really providential that she ended up in Boaz's field and not somewhere else, because, I mean, she had no protection.
Yeah, and that's a great point. Now, ADRA wouldn't give out knives. We would do things like, you know, provide flashlights and things.
Try to make safer
areas for them to be in, to prevent these things.
Well, and finally, I couldn't go. I looked for my little thinner, smaller Bible, but this is heavy. Yeah. But I figured it had to go along. What role do you think God, belief, trust, and faith actually play for a refugee? I'm thinking with nothing.
Well, I mean, I think that for the Christian, faith plays a huge role. Many refugees aren't Christian, so they may not have that
support.
That support, which would make it more challenging, I would think. Which is why it's so important for a Christian agency like ADRA to reach out to them and to help them and to be involved with them. And that's what God has called us to do in the Bible too, is to reach out to the homeless and the poor and the mm-hmm. destitute and to touch them in that way when they're needy. Mm-hmm. So, you know, getting out and touching them and in this way mm-hmm. is really impactful in their lives. And they can see, you know, what it is that Christians do.
Well, thank you so much. You know, it was kind of thought-provoking packing these things together for a moment, thinking of all those people that are forced to leave their homes
yeah.
and live an unsure existence somewhere else.
Absolutely.
Well, you're going to be staying on with us, but thank you for helping. How did I do? Do you think
I'll
survive?
I think there's room for improvement.
Definitely. Well, stay with us. We'll be back with some experts to dive into the story of Ruth.
The kingdom of heaven, it's like a farmer who went out to sow his seed, and some seed fell along the path, and the birds came and ate it up. Other seed fell on rocky, shallow ground. They sprang up quickly, but had no root. When the sun came, the plants were scorched, and they withered away. And some seed fell among thorns, which grew up and choked the plants. But there were some that fell on good soil, and they produced an enormous crop. The kingdom of heaven is also like a man who sowed good seed in his field. But while he slept, his enemy came and sowed weeds among the wheat. When the wheat sprouted, the weeds also appeared. But not wanting to uproot the wheat with the weeds, he let both grow together until the harvest. So he had his workers collect the weeds and burn them, while the wheat was gathered into his barn. And the kingdom of heaven is like the smallest of seeds, a mustard seed, planted in a field that grows into a large tree, and birds come to nest in its branches. It's also like yeast that a woman used in making bread. And even though she had only a little, she put it into a large amount of dough until it worked its way through all of it. And the kingdom of heaven is like a treasure hidden in a field. When a man found it, he hid it again. And in his joy, he sold everything he had to buy the field. Again, the kingdom of heaven is like a merchant looking for pearls. When he found one of great value, he went away and sold everything he had and bought it. Once again, the kingdom of heaven is like a fishing net that was thrown into the water and caught fish of every kind. When it was full, the fishermen dragged it to shore and sorted the good fish into crates and threw the bad ones out. Finally, every disciple in the kingdom of heaven is like a homeowner who brings from his storeroom new treasures as well as old.
The heavens declare the glory of God. The skies proclaim the work of His hands. Day after day they pour forth speech. Night after night they reveal knowledge. They have no speech, they use no words, no sound is heard from them. Yet their voice goes out into all the earth. Their words to the ends of the world.
You know, TV watching doesn't always make for good communication. It can be a very one-sided activity, but not on Storyline. We have all sorts of tools to help us connect and communicate. You can call us, text us, find Storyline on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, download the app, or subscribe to the HD podcast. If Storyline has impacted you in some special way, or if you have a Bible story that you'd like us to tackle, please let us know. And a big thank you to everyone who has contacted Storyline with comments and questions. We enjoy hearing from you and interacting with you. I think we'd all love to have relationships that really work. And I'm so glad that I have a great team of experts with me on Storyline as we look for these clues to great relationships in Ruth's story. We have Todd Reese, who is with us in the hands-on section. Todd, of course, brings with a wealth of information and experience. Thanks for staying with us again, Todd.
My pleasure.
We also have with us Pamela and Claudio Consuegra. They work as a husband and wife team for the family ministries in the Seventh-day Adventist Church. And they bring to us years of experience in working with families. It's a real pleasure to have you with us, too.
Glad to be here.
We're also joined by Pastor Daniel McKibben. Now, besides being a Bible expert, Daniel has another special connection to the story. Like Boaz, Daniel has also married a wonderful lady from a faraway country, the country of New Zealand, and we'll be seeing a lot of her. And a big welcome to Daniel.
Thank you, Chantel. It's good to be here.
Well, we've got this great team to tackle one of the nicest Bible stories.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, every week I say one of the nicest
Bible stories.
But every week it is the nicest Bible story.
Yes.
Now, we were speaking just a moment ago, Todd, we were speaking about, I guess, the darker side of the story with the refugee and being homeless and in a new culture.
Yeah, really, we're talking about the realities that refugees face and what they have to go through on a daily basis and the challenges that they have to face.
Mm-hmm. And that was really sobering. But a lot of us would think of Ruth as weddings and romance and love following your heart. But you look at the story of Ruth, there's not much following the heart taking place over here. Where's the heart romance in the story?
Well, you would look for that kind of romantic story, although there is another book in the Bible that deals with marriage and romance. That's the Song of Solomon. And it almost seems like Naomi is plotting a calculated move instead of allowing things to blossom naturally.
Yes.
But maybe she had a sense of urgency in a way. She was getting older. Mm-hmm. She was a refugee coming back home. And maybe she felt the need to take matters into her hand.
To push things along, to help love along a little bit over here. Right.
And I think perhaps before we even are introduced to the love that eventually develops between Boaz and Ruth, we see the love of Naomi.
Yes.
And, you know, when we see this relationship between a mother-in-law and a daughter-in-law and a willingness on a part of that daughter-in-law to follow the wisdom of the elder.
Now, in many cultures, they're mother-in-law jokes, and they normally kind of the...
I think they're in every culture.
In every culture. But this seems like the exact opposite.
That's right.
Well, that's a very interesting story in that she was willing to leave her own mother so she could be with her mother-in-law. So it really demonstrated a deep love for her mother-in-law. Just a beautiful story here.
Mm-hmm. And that deep sense of commitment that she has to her mother-in-law.
Yeah.
Well, we have a commitment that gets made in the story, of course, this chief commitment that is somewhat strange. It's made with a sandal that gets taken off, and we have Boaz come into the story, and he has a special term. He's not just the hero coming into the story. He's the kinsman redeemer. Mm-hmm. It's very foreign to us. Mm-hmm. What does this actually mean?
Yeah, we say, we pronounce it in my language, kinsman redeemer, meaning they're a kinsman, they're related to you. And in this story, beautifully so, Boaz accepted Naomi and Ruth as somebody as their kinsman. And then, of course, the redeemer is that they needed redeeming from their dreadful situation, as Todd was talking about, and as you were demonstrating with refugees, as they were in a terrible situation, and they were redeemed out of that situation.
God wanted to make sure that the people that suffered, the widows and the orphans, would be taken care of. And so he provided that system so that the property that used to belong to, say, the father, wouldn't go to somebody else. And so eventually the role of the kinsman redeemer was to redeem that property back to the original owner, so to speak.
And give them a home, a family, security,
safety,
regular source of food, all these things that we were talking about that a refugee wouldn't have.
Yeah.
And what a wonderful lesson, application to each of us spiritually, that despite our brokenness, we have a redeemer.
Amen.
You know, Jesus Christ becomes our redeemer.
Our kinsman redeemer.
That's right.
Yeah, and Hebrew says he's our elder brother. And so it's like we have this relationship with Jesus. It's on several levels, and this level here is the brother and also our redeemer, and it really makes you feel closer to Jesus than if he were only our redeemer or only our savior. Yeah.
As well as the husband. Jesus is the husband of the church, being the bride. So all those pictures are contained in that kinsman redeemer definition.
Mm-hmm. We've spoken about the kinsman redeemer and the definition. The story of Ruth is one of the books where Jesus isn't mentioned, of course, but where God isn't specifically mentioned. There's a couple of references to him, but we don't see or hear him working. It's a little toned down. Why do you think the story got into the Bible in the first place? I mean, it's just, you know, a widow and her daughter-in-law. It's not that dramatic.
You know, for me, as I read the book of Ruth, I'm reading a modern-day story.
Yeah.
Because if you think of all the family dynamics, I mean, you can just start with chapter one and continue through the end of Ruth. You see stories of economic peril, of poverty, of a widow, of a second marriage. All of the dynamics are here that really apply to families today.
Single parenting is another one.
That's right, single parenting. So as I read this, it gives us hope. It gives us hope today that no matter what situation we're in, no matter what trouble we're facing, God has a plan for us.
Of course, a theologian might say that another reason the book is included there is to establish the lineage of Jesus, and I think you mentioned that earlier. We have Boaz and Obed and Jesse and David. And of course, when we get to Luke and Matthew, the Gospels, you find those names listed there as well to show that Jesus came from that line of descendants or ancestors, I should say. So I think that might be another reason why this book is so important.
A bit of a family history as well.
Absolutely.
To take that one step further, also, you have Ruth was a Moabite, and she's a foreigner, and she's being grafted into the Israelites, which is really how, you know, Jesus, what he's done for us. For those who are not Israelites, he's grafted us into the salvation.
And one of the favorite themes of the Bible is that God loves to turn the tables. And so there's a horrible situation here, you know, three deaths of men, and that was extremely important in the days of Israel. And God turned the tables. And you see that whole theme through the Bible. And I think it's really important that our viewing audience understand that if you're going through really, really hard times, God loves to turn the tables and just put your trust in him.
He can make a bad situation into a good one.
Amen.
Good results at the end, obviously, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's probably one of the most encouraging parts of our story, that the tables can turn, that the stranger becomes part of the family. And all of this, of course, drawn together in our story of Jesus later on in the New Testament that brings us close and helps us escape the dire poverty that we're in. Well, this is a great story, and I'm so glad that we're tackling it together as a team. There's still a whole lot to discover, but we have to take a break. So we'll be back again soon, and we'll go on. We're going to be asking some big questions in our next section, too. This story may seem to be outdated, but you pointed out that it's not outdated. It's a classic that's really stood the test of time. And after the break, we're going to look at dating tips and clues to lasting relationships that we can find in Ruth's story. We also have a free study guide, and it's very easy. You just follow the instructions on your screen, and we'd love to share our free study guide with you. So stay with us. We'll be right back.
Jesus says the harvest is great. There are so many people waiting to be invited into his kingdom. You cannot possibly do the work all by yourself. But how do you know the right people to delegate responsibility to? We'll learn on Hope Sabbath School this week how to share ministry for the greatest impact for the kingdom of heaven. I invite you to join us.
You've just joined us, we're discussing Ruth's story.
This is an ancient story with very modern applications. Can we draw tips and clues to help us form lasting relationships from such an old story?
I think we can. And one of the things that stands out for me in this story is when I think of Boaz and what attracted him in the first place to Ruth. If you remember what Scripture tells us, it says he knew of her reputation. He knew that she was known for being kind, for being caring. In other words, he was attracted to her because of her character. And I think that's a wonderful lesson for young people today who, you know, who read this story in the Bible, to keep in mind that as you're looking for a mate, what matters most is their character.
What's so their looks of. Aren't everything.
Absolutely. And that's what attracted Boaz to Ruth. She had a reputation. She was known in the community for being kind.
Which is one of the reasons why when we talk to young people who are dating, we tell them to make sure they visit each other's family, because you can learn a lot about them from how they relate to their parents. When Boaz looked at Ruth, he could tell that she was very kind, very devoted to her mother-in-law.
Her mother-in-law of all people.
That attracted Boaz. If you are this good to her, you're going to be very good to me, which obviously she eventually proved to be.
And I think that really points out, if a young person is looking for a mate or an older person, is that you become a good husband or wife. And so if you're looking for a good husband or wife, then you improve yourself. And so when that person comes along, the right person, then you will be fit for the position of husband or
wife. So more important than looking for the right person is being the right person.
Exactly. Yeah.
So instead of looking for Mr. or Miss Wright, learning to be Mr. or Miss Wright.
Yeah. And she was very much Mrs. Wright.
Absolutely.
Her character was just a beautiful character.
Yes.
And
And this is probably it. We're speaking about more mature people as well here, probably not young adults, but older people as well. Yeah. Today we have a lot of people that are looking at marriage for a second time, which is probably what Ruth was looking at.
That's right. Yes.
But we have the same dating principles that apply.
Yes.
Character. Look at family relations.
Absolutely.
And what was the last thing we said here? Be, right?
Yeah. Be what you want the other person to be. Yes.
And can I add one more?
Yes, please. I'm sure there must be a couple of others here.
I was thinking if keeping it up into God, to God in prayer, because if it's His will for your life, He'll have it in His timing.
There's a lot of coincidences in the story, if we want to read it that way. You know, they come back to Bethlehem. Maybe that's the obvious choice. But of all the fields around Bethlehem, Ruth goes totally unknowing into Boaz's field.
But was it a coincidence or maybe God was directing? You know, I guess I'm not a believer in coincidence. It's like I'm not a believer in love at first sight. Although I did like this one at first sight. But I think God was indeed directing. And of course, Naomi was coming back home. She knew the people in the area. She knew Boaz was a member of the family and knew what field he had. So it was, in a way, sort of a safe bet, so to speak, to say, start there. Why go to somebody else's field? Go to Boaz. And maybe she also knew that Boaz was a kind man, and therefore it was a good thing for her. A daughter-in-law to go.
So you say no coincidence.
Yeah.
God leads in sometimes very obvious, sometimes less obvious ways.
Yes.
So it's perhaps keeping our antennas connected, keeping our eyes open for how God actually leads.
Which is safer than maybe try to make our way into God's plans and find out that maybe we're trying to force His hand and make a serious mistake.
So would this mean, I mean, All of us are married over here. Does this mean just sitting back and waiting for God to, you know, run that person right into my arms over here from the story of Ruth?
Well, you know, and one of the things that we can learn from this story also is that maybe God doesn't have in mind, or it's not in His plans, for everyone to be married. I know we look in Genesis where, you know, when Adam was created, God said, well, it's not good for man to be alone. But I know so many singles. In fact, when we go to First Corinthians, Paul talks about the advantages of being single,
the
advantages of the to the kingdom, to the ministry of being single. So maybe it isn't in God's plan for a person to be married or to find a person to be with.
We don't have like other stories with everybody happily getting married at the end of the story. We have probably the main character, really. We've been focusing on Ruth. Mm-hmm. Probably the main character is Naomi.
Yeah.
The story begins with her. It doesn't end with her getting married.
That's right.
That's right.
But there's growth and development. Mm. Let's look at Naomi a moment. Mm-hmm. How does she grow and develop? She's probably our biggest character here.
Well, if we think of all the tragedies, really, if you want to put it that way, that she experienced in her life, and I can imagine that scene in my mind as she's standing there with her two daughter-in-laws. Really, she should have said, please come with me. Yeah, okay. I beg you to come with me. I have no one left.
You were all I
got. You know, my husband has just died. My sons have died. You're it. Mm. Please don't go to your families. Come with me. But she exhibited so much
giving.
So much giving and selflessness and humility that she said, you know, I want to put your interests before mine. Mm-hmm. You need to take care of yourselves. You're young women, you need to go back home. So just right there, what a wonderful lesson that she taught us of selfless service.
And, you know, I've learned something about people. The more compassionate I see a person in a person, the more they've been through. Mm-hmm. And so if somebody's really compassionate, you can almost guarantee they've been through a lot of trials and problems in their lives. And those trials develop character and draw you close to God if you allow them to. Mm-hmm. And I think this is a prime example right here in Naomi's life.
Well, I would be remiss if I didn't point out that when she was returning back to her home, she was calling herself Mara, which means bitter.
Yes.
So it wasn't like she was without some grief and sorrow and maybe needed some psychosocial support of some kind, you know. But there's healing.
Well, she definitely seemed to have issues with God. Even if we have a look in Ruth 1, verse 20, what you just quoted. Mm-hmm. Don't call me Naomi, call me Mara, for the Almighty has dealt very bitterly with me. Mm. I went out full, the Lord has brought me home again empty. Why do you call me Naomi, since the Lord has testified against me and the Almighty has afflicted me?
She had a very kind of a Job, you know, Job said, God took everything away from me. And Naomi had the same thing. God took everything away from me. However, even though her theology might not have been perfect, her heart was right. And in the end, she followed God. She had faith in God, even though her faith was sometimes very thin. Mm-hmm. And I don't know about the rest of you, but I've had my faith thinned out sometimes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, the experience of Naomi reminds me of my own mother. I was 15 when my father died. And so at the age of 49, my mother found herself a widow with three boys.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Boys meaning one of them was a little older, already in college, and had to emigrate from our home country of Colombia to the United States to, for the first time in her life, work, because my father always said, I'll work and provide for you. Mm-hmm. And so she finds herself with this grief consuming her, really not even wanting to survive, but not knowing how. Mm-hmm. But eventually, God took advantage of that situation to bring us to a greater knowledge of God. Mm-hmm. And so I see Naomi, the same growth that she experienced, that sometimes she was so bitter. Mm-hmm. Pain sometimes puts a blinder on our eyes that we can't even see God.
Mm-hmm. And this is where, you know, the Bible says everything works together for good to those who love God or called according to His purposes. It doesn't say everything is good.
Yeah.
It says it works together for good.
Yeah.
So if I offered you a cup of flour to eat, you'd say no way. And you a half a cup of butter, you'd say no way. And you a teaspoon of salt, you'd say no way. But if I put them together and made pancakes, you would eat them.
Mm.
And so the individual ingredients are detestable, just like the individual areas in her life were bad, but put together, it made a beautiful mix.
Well, I love the pancake mix.
Yeah.
That sounds like a sweet deal.
Yeah.
We're busy talking about Ruth, and God seems to be playing a central, if behind-the-scenes role in this meeting and marriage. We touched on it briefly,
But we need to ask the big question, does God have someone for each of us, and how involved is God really in our love lives? Right after the break. Stay with us. We'll be back.
Plantar fasciitis is something that many people get. It's a pain in the bottom of their feet caused by inflammation of the fascia. Now, some people can have this sort of pain when they have a heel spur. That is a little spicule of bone that's on the heel. And it may be that that is causing the pain, but for many, it's just the fascia that's inflamed. Personally, I've suffered from this, and I found it was best, before jumping out of bed in the morning, to actually get out and place my feet on the floor and stretch the feet, gently teasing out those tendons on the base of the foot. You can also use a can of frozen juice and roll it under your feet. I found that that helped me too. And then you can buy those little supportive gel pads that you can put into the heel of your shoe. That also will be helpful. At least it was for me. So don't despair.
We've been speaking about Ruth, the outsider who married well and left a mark on history. Now, God really is playing a central role in the story, but it's a very subdued role. Does God have someone for everyone? Or how involved is he really in the section of our lives, which for most of us, I think, is the big question, at least in some point?
I think God has a plan for every one of us. Mm-hmm. You know, Scripture says, I knit you together in your mother's womb. Mm-hmm. So even while we were being formed in our mother's womb, God had a plan for us. It may or may not include marriage. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's what we tell young people today. And specifically as we look at this story of Ruth, when Ruth made the decision to go with Naomi, I don't think Ruth went thinking she was going to get married.
No. Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, I think the opposite was true.
She was probably giving up all hope.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. When she mm-hmm. made the commitment to leave her home, mm-hmm. to leave her family and go with Naomi, her intention was actually to be a caregiver mm-hmm. for Naomi, mm-hmm. to take care of this mother-in-law that she had grew to love. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I think today we need to be open to God's will, to whatever that is, whether that's singleness mm-hmm. or whether God has a mate for us, mm-hmm. just to lay our lives before Him and that He would guide and direct our paths.
But I think the idea that we have to have someone really goes back to the Greek philosopher Plato, mm-hmm. who used to teach that we all have a soulmate someplace in the world, mm-hmm. and so we have to find that person. And people are still looking for that soulmate, and they marry the person that they think is their soulmate, and when they find differences, they hurry to divorce that person because they have to find their soulmate again. Mm. Well, what we have God as our kinsman redeemer, mm-hmm. as our spouse,
soulmate,
as our true right. soulmate, then He completes us, fulfills us completely. Mm-hmm. And then we can allow Him to find a person for us mm-hmm. if it is in His plans.
So we're not looking for a soulmate as such. It seems to be the story of Ruth, at least, tells us, be ready to let God mm-hmm. let you be everything you can be.
Yes.
We're not dependent on someone else to find our true worth. Mm-hmm. We find this in our Kingsman Redeemer.
That's right.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, that takes a lot of pressure off, I think,
mm-hmm.
in the big run. Yeah. We don't have to be doing the looking. We're probably looking at getting a better relationship with Jesus and letting Him guide and direct.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah.
Well, I think that's very comforting for a lot of people that are yeah. perhaps getting a little desperate at some stage. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We skip ahead of the story. I mean, there's so many points that we could touch on over here, but I found this section extremely interesting. Towards the end, mm-hmm. In chapter 4, where we have the crowd actually condoning the wedding and offering advice and blessings, we have in verse 11, the people who were at the gate and the elders, they said, we are witnesses. Mm-hmm. The Lord make the woman who is coming to your house, that's Ruth,
Make her like Rachel and Leah, the two who built the house of Israel, and may you prosper in Ephrathah and be famous in Bethlehem. May your house be like the house of Perez, whom Tamar bore to Judah, because of the offspring which the Lord will give you from this woman. Mm. Now, first, that sounds like a very nice wish, but then I said, oh, Tamar? Rachel and Leah, that sure didn't sound like a happy home to me. This doesn't sound like a very good blessing. Why did they use these names? They couldn't have picked some other ancestors?
Well, but they were all ancestors of the upcoming Redeemer. And I think that's the reason they're listed here, as well as again in the genealogy of Jesus in Matthew and in Luke, to show that this perfect man, the God-man, had a little difficult family. Yes, mm-hmm. In fact, I spoke a sermon one time and I entitled it The Corrupt Family of Jesus, meaning even from a bad background, mm-hmm. someone good mm-hmm. could come. And that, of course, was Jesus, because he was God.
And that really speaks to those who may have a very, very dysfunctional family, parents, mm-hmm. maybe mm-hmm. terrible alcoholism or beatings or stuff like that. And mm-hmm. you hear that a lot. There's hope for all of us. Mm. No matter what your family lineage is, there's hope, because mm-hmm. God can turn it around and make it really good.
That's right.
God doesn't need perfect families to work with.
Now, a matter of fact, if you look like Hebrews 12, you know, the faith chapter, all these strong, faithful men and women, you read that and you say, my, oh my, some of these people really made some mm-hmm. silly, silly mistakes. Guess what? That gives me hope, because I've made a lot of silly mistakes too. And God doesn't cast people off because they make mistakes.
Even some of the most admirable ones, like Abraham.
Yes, yes.
He sure had
a lot of
bunch.
Mm-hmm. And family problems as well back in there.
Yes. Yes.
Well, we can't end Ruth without asking you which part you enjoyed the most of the story. Well, let's begin with the lady, because you probably got the most connected idea here.
Well, I really like the lesson that this has for me personally, that I have the capability of being a positive influence on someone else. Mm-hmm. Naomi was such a positive influence on her daughter-in-law, Ruth, and all of us mm-hmm. have that potential of, in our daily interactions, to represent Christ to those we meet every day.
Great positive influence. Mm-hmm. Thank you, definitely.
You know, my name in Spanish means with mother-in-law, so this story is very special to me. And I believe that having a good relationship with your in-laws makes it for a good relationship with your spouse. I was blessed with a very good mother-in-law, and I want to believe that you had a very good mother-in-law.
Yes, I did.
We really related well with both of them. So it's something that we can learn. Instead of fighting or simply telling jokes about mm-hmm. the mother-in-law, if we have a good closeness with our in-laws, we are the ones mm-hmm. that benefit.
We come up with the blessing.
That's right.
Yes.
Good, healthy in-law relationships can be supportive.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Wonderful. Thank you. Yeah.
I love the fact that here's a family who's in dire straits and they need assistance, and God is guiding and protecting them as they go through. And he's doing that also through other people mm-hmm. who are reaching out to help that family. And I think that he calls us to do the same thing today.
I guess for Naomi, there was, at least at the beginning, there was these really dark moments where she felt she had no one. Mm-hmm. God had left her. And yet God was there in the person of Ruth.
Right? Yeah.
Ruth was serving as God's love at that moment. Mm-hmm. So looking for other forms of God showing his love. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's wonderful. Thanks, Todd.
I really enjoyed the love that Naomi and Ruth had for each other. They were not blood relatives. They mm-hmm. they were mother-in-law and daughter-in-law. And, you know, with the circumstances, they could easily have separated and justifiably done it. Nobody would have said anything. But they really had this deep love and care for each other. And I guess the reason that really appeals to me is Jesus said, this is how the rest of the world would know that you are my disciples. Mm-hmm. The love that you have one for another. And that was so beautifully demonstrated among those two women there.
Yeah. Yeah.
That love that would shine out.
Yes. And then it kind of poured over into Boaz. And it seemed like everybody they came in contact with kind of had that love. That
pulled everyone in.
Yeah, yeah.
Pulled everyone in. Well, Thank you very, very much. A big thank you to Pamela, to Claudio, to Todd and Daniel. I really enjoyed exploring this great story with you. If you came in halfway through the program and missed out on part of our program, don't worry, all's not lost. You can go to hopetv.org/storyline and you can watch this episode and any other episode at your leisure. If you want to share your reaction to the story, just go to our website. And remember that Storyline is available in the iTunes store as a podcast. You can download the entire episode and you can watch it on the go. Now, please don't go anywhere. There's still more right after the break.
Jesus says the harvest is great. There are so many people waiting to be invited into his kingdom. You cannot possibly do the work all by yourself. But how do you know the right people to delegate responsibility to? We'll learn on Hope Sabbath School this week how to share ministry for the greatest impact for the kingdom of heaven. I invite you to join us.
Against the background of all the dysfunctional relationships in the book of Judges, the book of Ruth is something special. It's that bright spot in history. The foreigner Ruth strikes gold, gold in relationships. She comes to understand that profound loyalty and faithfulness to God, and this loyalty spills over to her relationships with others and makes them work. Ruth shows me that God understands about the pain of a broken heart. With God leading, I'm not doomed to a life of empty, lonely relationships. I can find God's faithful love reflected in all the relationships of my life. Ruth and Naomi are one of the most positive examples of friendship in the Bible. And of course, Boaz, he's much more than the knight in shining armor. As kinsman redeemer, he's a prototype of a God who would become a man. Our kinsman to take us under his wing so that each of us can know that whatever the past or future holds, we are loved. We are held in God's hands. The story of Ruth invites each of us not just to look for that big love, but to put the plot of our storyline as well as our hopes, dreams, and difficult relationships into the hands of God, into his loving hands, always.